Teaching Tax Flow podcast, where the goal is to empower and educate you to legally and ethically minimize taxes paid over your lifetime.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. Here today, we are going to dive into episode 75. It's got a little bit of a ring there. Those 1099s, the what, when, and how they are issued. But before that, as always, let's take a brief moment and thank our sponsor on this episode.
This podcast is sponsored by Reps Tracker. Are you a real estate investor who is bogged down with a huge tax burden? Real estate investing can open the door to powerful tax benefits. Reps Tracker can streamline the process of accelerating these tax benefits. To take advantage of a special TTF community discount, go to www.repstracker.com/affiliate/teachingtaxflow and use the code IFG. You can look in our show notes or email us at hello@teachingtaxflow.com.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Teaching Tax Flow, the podcast. We have got a great topic today. I know some of you were waiting for. We are going to talk about those 1099s. So as I always like to poke fun at, if you took the all of 13 seconds or so, listen to the intro of this show, or if you know how to read, you probably read the show notes already. It's kind of like the cliff notes. But without giving away too much information on these 1099s, Chris, welcome back to, let's call it what it is. It's your own show. How's it going, man?
It is going wonderfully, John. It's our show. It's our little baby.
Oh,
if we can get it a social security number, maybe we can put it on our tax return. We'll have a custody. We'll have a custody agreement.
Oh boy. See where this is going? Oh man. Let's take the fun out of you wanting to formalize our child here. I guess we can call this podcast. But we brought on somebody that knows a lot more about this than I do, which, as Chris likes to poke fun at me with, it doesn't take a whole lot to do that. So Caitlin Rummel from EH Business Services is going to run us through what these 1099s actually are and maybe even more importantly, what they aren't. So Caitlin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, we're doing pretty good. Obviously, you can tell by me and Mr. Pacuro poking fun at each other. So hopefully you know what you signed up for.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a good time.
Well, I apologize for anything that Chris may say. So we,
that goes without saying. Well, Caitlin, welcome. I know we've worked a lot on some mutual clients together. Thanks for joining the podcast. Before we dive into the 1099 issue or issues, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into bookkeeping and what kind of clients that you typically work with.
So I got into bookkeeping because of my mom. She was a bookkeeper. And just growing up, seeing that kind of got me interested. And where I learned most of my stuff from was her. I'm sorry, somebody just walked in.
Hey, you know what? It's kind of like a 1099 when they randomly show up in the mail. You know, unexpected. You need to know what to do with these things, right? So as is life. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Totally fine. Exactly. Totally fine.
So, Caitlin, man, where did you grow up? And I mean, what do you work with clients in a specific area or all over the country?
So I grew up in Pennsylvania. I still live here. And mostly I've worked remotely with clients all over the United States.
And then, too, Caitlin, so here's a question for you. So obviously, Chris knows more about this than I do. You know more about it than all of us. So a lot of our listeners being self-employed, right? So I'll kind of use myself as an example to kind of get into this. So first question, right? I always used to call Chris and other people like him, you know, oh, well, they're my bookkeeper. They're my accountant. In your eyes, they're different, right?
Correct, yeah.
Obviously. So, and I know we talked about this in a previous episode, but I really want people to kind of get the grasp on this, right? So give us kind of your comparison really between the two of those, and then I'll get into a 1099 specific question for you.
So I work throughout the year with their transactions, their daily transactions with their bank account, categorizing their expenses, looking at their income, if they do like accounts receivable, that kind of stuff, just making sure that their invoices are all being paid, and sending reports, that kind of stuff. I kind of prepare their books so that Chris can, at the end of the year, do his thing.
Makes sense. Makes sense. So here's the 1099 question, right? So again, kind of using myself as an example, had a marketing agency for a number of years. We had a couple employees, a lot of contractors, right? And when I first started off, I just assumed that, you know, we just kind of paid these people ad hoc as the projects came in and projects were delivered. And that was kind of the end of it. And then this thing, 1099 rolled around in my mind. And it kind of takes you a little bit by surprise, right? So I know they're kind of walk us through, you know, what exactly these are. But then, you know, we'll get into it a little bit later in the show, or feel free to talk about them at your will. But so let's talk about what they are. But then also, if somebody doesn't issue them, you know, what are the potential issues with that, as well as anything else really around it? Kind of approaching this as if nobody knows anything about what a 1099 is.
Okay. So a 1099, the most common one is the 1099 NEC. So that's what I will be referencing here. Is just a way for businesses to report income or stuff that they, money they paid to either a contractor or another small business for services. There is a tax gap in income that is reported to the IRS, and this is kind of the IRS's way to capture that income. Of course, they want their money, so they want everyone to pay taxes on the money that they make. So businesses want to make sure that they're giving 1099s to people that perform services for their business. So if they have like a graphic design company they work for, they work with, or if they have like a landscaper, both of those are going to be issued a 1099. There are penalties. All 1099s, whether we're talking about the NEC or any of the other 1099s, they are all due to be filed by January 31st of every year. And if they aren't, there are some penalties in place that you could get.
Makes sense. And what are those penalties actually? Are they pretty substantial, or are they, you know, just kind of a nuisance? Chris, you probably know that one.
Right. No, they're both giant stuff. Yeah, no, they're both, John. They are a nuisance, but they could pile up, you know. And I think that, you know, one of the things that Caitlin pointed out first is that there are several types of 1099s, right? We get them all the time. We get 1099 INT for your interest, 1099 DIV dividend, 1099B, 1099 Rs for retirement distributions. But what it's the 1099s that cause the most confusion by far are the 1099 NEC. So Caitlin hit the nail on the head. There are 1099 MISC for miscellaneous income, but really that changed a little bit ago, where that NEC, so non-employee compensation, the penalties can be significant. There's a couple different issues. There are, first of all, the worst penalty would be backup withholding, right? So if, let's say you paid someone $10,000 and you didn't issue them a 1099, well, you can get charged 28% backup withholding, because essentially the government's saying, well, that's the tax rate we would assume that someone would pay on this, so you're just going to pay the tax because you bozoed around and you didn't get the required information. The late filing penalties, they range from $50 to $280 per form, depending on, you know, it's kind of like a speeding ticket, John. If you're going 5 over, it's probably a little less. The way you drive, John, you might be going 50. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, you're very
depends safe. What we're driving here.
You're a very safe driver, John. You've got that big diesel, so you can't get going too much. But if you're very negligent, it could be higher. Same thing with, you know, if a business fails to file, those penalties can range, you know, range not only, so there's a late filing penalty, and then there's a failure to file penalty. So just like in income tax, there's a late payment of tax penalty, and then there's a failure to file. Those are $50 to $560 per form. with the intentional disregard being up to $560 per form. It's very rare that someone has an intentional disregard. Usually what we see is they might not understand, but hence why we're doing this podcast, right? They might not understand the reporting requirements. So there are always, you know, reasonable cause exceptions, or there might be a good reason you didn't issue a 1099, but that's where bookkeeping and Caitlin and the team at EH Business and other bookkeepers really come into play. It's a good question about penalties, but what we want to do is we want to prevent the penalties before they happen. So Caitlin, I'm going to throw it back to you. What are some of the things that you recommend that you guys implement within your bookkeeping business to identify a problem before it's a problem? Meaning, oh gosh, I see a contractor popping up in someone's books. What should someone do to make sure that they collect, you know, what do they need? First of all, what kind of information do they need from that contractor? And second of all, what's best practices for tracking?
So first thing that you want to do when you start any relationship with a contractor is get a W-9. This is going to give you the information that you need to collect, to file your 1099 at the end of the year. You want to make sure that you're getting this from the start so that in January, you're not scrambling around trying to get all of the W-9s that you need. It's better to have it and then find out that you don't need it.
Well, what are best practices and how, you know, for tracking how much someone's been paid? So for instance, small businesses use QuickBooks Online, and all of them, you're not required to, obviously. That's a private organization that has that software. But what are some of the practical tips, especially for someone just starting out? I mean, let's say someone just starts an ice cream stand, scoops in at a county fair, and they hire some labor ad hoc. Obviously, we have another podcast episode that talks about labor classification, but let's assume they hire a contractor. Best practices for making sure that the amount paid to that person is kept track of.
So I would recommend getting some sort of software. We like to use QuickBooks Online, but if your business isn't quite there yet, you could do it manually. Just make sure that you're tracking all of the payments that you're paying to your contractor, and keep on file their W-9 so that you have that to reference at the end of the year. Just because you have a contractor doesn't always mean that you will get file a 1099 for them. If you pay them under $600 a year, they won't need a 1099. If they are a corporation, either an S-Corp or a C-Corp, they won't need one. And how you find that out is on that W-9. It will have a little box checked if they are a corporation, and then you won't have to send them a 1099. Also, if you are paying them with a credit card, you won't have to include that in the amount towards the 1099. So if you pay them through your bank or ACH or checks, you will include that in those transactions. But with a credit card, those are reported on a 1099-K. So those won't need to be included for the 1099 NC and EC.
Now that is a great point. So if you're, and that's a question we get a lot, you know, in the teaching tax flow community. So as Caitlin said, let's say I paid, I had a birthday party for my son. I hired John to jump out of the cake. wouldn't have too many people thrilled about that. Well, let's say we do that.
No, they think I was a pinata, and they just try to hit me with a baseball bat or something.
And for some stupid reason, I paid John more than $600 to jump out of this cake, right? That would be an awful, awful way to spend my money. But let's say I did. I would want to get John's W-9 information. Well, I guess if it's my kid's birthday party, I wouldn't really issue him a time. Well, let's assume it's a corporate event. I'm trying to impress my clients, and John jumps out of the cake. I would want, like Caitlin said, that W-9 information. So important. That's a withholding certification. Just like an employee fills out a W-4 that tells its employer how much tax to withhold. That W-9 is telling the payee, or payor rather, how much money, you know, what are they classified as for business tax, business purposes. So Kaylin, you could have an LLC that's taxed as an S or C corp, hence you wouldn't issue a 1099. Now, unfortunately, the $600 threshold is extremely low. There's some legislation out there to increase that. I think we'd all be happy if that went up. But if you meet the $600 threshold, then I would have to issue John that 1099. But if I wanted to make sure I got my Southwest Airline points or Marriott points, oh, I shouldn't have said those two because they are not sponsors of this podcast yet, although they should deeply consider that. And I pay with a credit card, then the credit card company actually takes care of that 1099 requirement and issues John that 1099-K. So, Kaylin, that was very helpful and good for people to know. You know, it does get kind of tricky when you're paying people with like a Venmo or a Stripe app. You know, you've got to really look at making sure, you know, in general, and Kaylin, you could speak to this a little more than I can, I'm sure, but that if, you know, to determine if the third party is going to issue that 1099-K to the person ultimately getting the payment. So
that's where having those software, the bookkeeping software in place really helps out. QuickBooks will automatically take out those transactions that are made with a credit card and just give you the transactions that count towards the 1099. So you can easily see how much you're supposed to file that 1099, and QuickBooks will do that for you with a push of a button. You got to go through the steps.
Nice. Well, I want to clarify something. Backup withholding is 24%, not 28%. So I apologize. You know, I just wanted to give the government more money, I guess. Usually the opposite is what we're trying to accomplish in teaching tax flow. But yeah, and there are, I mean, there could be challenges. I mean, Kaylin, you know, maybe you could speak to some of the challenges, common challenges that you see out there with 1099s. But I'll give you an example. What if you had a corp company that was only open 8 months of the year, they close up shop, they're still obligated to issue 1099s to people that they paid. And who knows, they may have closed their bank account. They may have gone, you know, bye-bye. We don't know what, you know, who knows. So that's any other things that could be a challenge that or tips that you can give people to prevent those challenges?
I think the best thing is just staying organized throughout the year and knowing when you're starting that relationship, this landscaper, I know I'm going to have to give him a 1099 at the end of the year, or whoever it is, just knowing who they are and having your books in order is going to set you up for January, being able to do those 1099s. And if you haven't, just go back through your bank records, your statements, look at your statements and look at your transactions and do it manually. Make a spreadsheet of each of the contractor's names and look for the transactions in your statements to find out the numbers.
Well, we've talked about that 1099 NEC. That's really the focus of this specific episode. We've talked about when you issue it. Kaylin, you said these are due on January 31st for unincorporated payees that are paid $600 or more. Final thing we wanted to talk about was the how. So, you know, do these get mailed in? Do they get submitted electronically? What are the best, you know, best practices? I mean, and John, you know, in our pre-show meeting, made some cracks about my age. Yes, I'm a little more mature age than you two. Back when I first started, we would have a rent copy, I think, that went to the IRS, and we'd have to mail copies to the person getting paid, and then another copy to the state. So, Kaylin, are there options for people to do this electronically versus mail it in?
There are. There's many different softwares out there that you can use. Some are mixed in with your bookkeeping software. Like I said, QuickBooks Online, you can go through easily. But there's other softwares that you can use outside of QuickBooks just for 1099 processing. And then you pay per 1099 that you file.
No, I appreciate that. So we've hit the who rather the what, the when, and how. I mean, we also, I guess maybe one more question for for Caitlin, and then see if John has anything to throw in the mix. But we've got, you know, sometimes you see taxpayers get a notice from the IRS that there's a matching issue. And sometimes people either could be on purpose or could be on accident, give someone the wrong information, wrong social security number. And what happens is a 1099 gets filed with the IRS and it doesn't match the records that the IRS has. In that case, I guess, Caitlin, have you ever run into a client that has had that situation?
Yes, we have. You're going to want to go back to whatever side you're on. You're going to want to go back to whoever filed that 1099. Also look at your records and see if there was something that was missed and if you can narrow down what the difference is. Go back to who filed it. And once it's resolved, you can do a correction through that same software that you used to file the first 1099 and issue the correct amount for the 1099.
And that's actually a great point to kind of wrap up with this, right? Is sometimes it's not done malicious, neglectful, where people just forgot sometimes, you know, the 8 turned into a 0 and then, you know, all the chain links don't go together. So I appreciate both of you kind of running through this. I kind of feel like I was sitting here taking notes, you know, like I'm in a lecture session, because it's interesting because Caitlin really, you know, knowing the relationship that you guys have had working with Chris so much in the past, and it's like a, we'll call it a harmonious process, right? Because Chris, you guys, you know, you're not the ones on the tax side filing 1099s, and Caitlin, you know, you guys and your team do a fantastic job of really preparing them, and I wouldn't say out of sight, out of mind, but you guys handle it so well for clients that when it comes time, then, you know, we won't call it tax season because we don't want Chris's head to, you know, explode on us. We'll call it tax time. When it comes time to collect all those, you guys obviously preparing them well ahead of time. Chris, you and your team, or your team specifically, you know, you guys have them in place. So there's not really, oh, I wonder if they were done or what are these things. And Caitlin, you went into some really, really good points, I think, that a lot of people don't think about. I mean, to be honest, I didn't even know that with the credit card payments, you know, not requiring filing. So that was, I appreciate that personally. But then also, you know, kind of reiterate what you had mentioned, really just the importance of getting that W-9 as early as you possibly can, even if you don't need it, right? So case in point, you might have somebody that you're bringing on, say you hire them $100 an hour, you got them two hours, you know, you're well under that $600 threshold, you're at $200, say, but who knows, you may ramp up and kick into another contracted project with them later in the year. So it's nice to get that from the beginning. But then also too, from the employee, or I shouldn't say the employee, from the company side of things, we don't want to get into employee classification issues, which is a whole previous podcast, but it almost, I would say, it puts your best foot forward, right? Say you begin working with a contractor, you request that W-9 from them right out of the gate. It kind of shows that you got your act together, you respect the relationship, and obviously it makes your life easier on your side, Caitlin. So thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You know, it's nice to get another voice on here than just me and Chris. You know, he's referencing all the old way of doing things and filing these forms. They probably, you know, he probably had a stack of these forms right next to his abacus sitting on his desk too, is the way he used to do things. So,
we'll make a bonfire out of them and make sure that these get filed electronically. And if you have any questions, definitely reach out to us. We can get you connected with Caitlin's, all her information and EH Business will be in this podcast, link and, show notes, I should say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you both for joining us. And thank you, everybody, for joining us here as well on the listening side of the podcast. Hopefully, you took some notes from this. And, you know, as mentioned, myself included, we covered a couple things here that you probably didn't know before. But really, just harping home, as I always say, harping home, because it makes absolutely no sense when I say that. I did it about 15 episodes ago, and they called me out on it. So I just make up my own terms here. Obviously, you can't do that. Figures on a 1099. So, all joking aside, we will see everybody back here next week, same place, different time, on the Teaching Tax Flow podcast.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us here on this episode as we dove into those 1099s, those pesky little 1099s sometimes, but nevertheless, very important. So, Caitlin, thank you again for joining us on this show. Dove into some great, great topics, some little components, as we could say, of those 1099s that a lot of us maybe not have knew about, I should say. And actually, again, kind of throwing myself in front of or under the bus, I should say, I really didn't know about that with the credit cards. So now I do, and hopefully you do as well. But as always, any questions you guys have for us, or if you want an introduction to Caitlin and her team, please drop us a line. You can even email us at hello@teachingtaxflow.com, or better yet, connect with us on social media on pretty much every platform out there, or even easier, just go to defeatingtaxes.com. It'll send you directly to our private Facebook group. Go ahead, join that. This is your invite. Drop us a line through there, or just ask any tax questions. Either myself, won't be giving you any real tax advice, let's be honest with that, I'm just the marketing guy, but Chris or other thought leaders in that group will be more than happy to answer your question or connect you with somebody who does. And I guarantee if you have that question, like you always heard back in school, if you have the question, we almost bet that other people have the same one. So don't wait to ask it. Feel comfortable. Ask those questions. Let's do it together. Let's defeat taxes. Sounds very Viking-ish of us. But anyways, we'll see everybody back here very soon. Keep dropping us those questions, comments, feedback, anything you have. We are here for it. And hopefully y'all are ready for tax prep time. So it's creeping up sooner than you think. So, see everybody back here very soon.
The content provided is for educational purposes only. We encourage you to seek personalized investment advice from your financial professional. For all tax and legal advice, please consult your CPA or attorney. Investment advisory services are offered through Cabin Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Securities are offered through Cabin Securities, a registered broker-dealer. The content of this podcast does not constitute an offer of securities. Offerings can only be made through an offering memorandum, and you should carefully examine the risk factors and other information contained in the memorandum.